Good afternoon, everyone. I'm calling to order this meeting of the Taxes Committee for April 11th, 2023. The first item on the agenda is approval of the minutes for April 4th. Vice Chair Norris.
Chair Gomez, I move the minutes from the April 4th meeting of the Tax Committee.
Excellent. Vice Chair Norris has moved the minutes. Is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, please say no. Motion carries, and the minutes for April 4th, 2023 have been adopted. First up on the agenda is House File 442, Representative Herr. Welcome back to the Tax Committee. I'm going to move that House File 442 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. And I understand, Representative Herr, that there is an author's amendment.
Madam Chair, there is an author's amendment, and if we could adopt the amendment, it does put the bill in the order for us to have a discussion of today. It does increase the overall impact, the threshold. So for a married couple, it's $1 million for those filing jointly, and the $600,000 for single taxpayers, and $800,000 for the head of household taxpayers. And then, those are some of the adjustments in the amendment, but it puts the bill in the order that we need to for the discussion today.
Excellent. Thank you for explaining that. So I will move the A1 amendment. Is there any discussion on the amendment? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, please say no. The motion prevails, and the A1 amendment is adopted, and the bill is in the form that the author would like. Representative Herr, to House File 442 as amended.
Thank you, Chair Gomez and Committee, for hearing House File 442. I think that maybe what I'll do is just address maybe quickly about why this bill is so important at this time, and I do have testifiers here today who will speak to the bill. But I know that on weighing on many people's mind is that we have a record surplus. And that why is there a need to raise taxes? And I just want to be very clear that, what we have in our surplus is one-time money. And we do know that as a state that we care about people and we care about ensuring that they have the resources that they need in order to live full lives. And in order to do that, we need dedicated revenues. Just as an example, in pensions, which I chair, we needed $3 billion in order to actually address the needs of the individuals. Pensions to ensure that they are whole or they are fully funded or to ensure that changes that we need to make to ensure that people have the cost of living adjustments needed, I would have needed over $3.3 billion. And what I got was a record target, which was $600 million, and we did the best that we could with that. And that we're also seeing the same thing that in ag, as I talked to Chair Vang, we talked about how there are programs for farm to table that needs ongoing funding, which we do not have and we can't do with one-time money. And so when we're talking about from our farmers to our families in the city, that in order for us to provide the resources they need to have good quality of life, we do need to have increased dedicated revenue sources, and that is why this bill is really important at this time. So with that, I know there will be a lot of questions specifically about the bill and what it does, but I do just want to remind the committee that this bill really looks at income levels, the taxable income, as I stated earlier, jointly for $1 million, and if you're single taxpayer, that's $600,000, and then for $800,000 for heads of household taxpayers. And I'll just be really upfront with this committee that last year I was able to pull the actual number of people impacted, but because we were on break and I did not want to ask staff to do extra work for me during the time period, the numbers that I'll be able to share with you may be based on a little bit older data, but it is all nonetheless is actually even more favorable because we increased that taxable amount from $500,000 to $1 million. And so with that, Chair, I would turn it over to my testifiers to for their testimony.
Thank you very much, Chair Herr. So we have a number of testifiers. Is Liotta Goodney here? Maybe not, we heard. Okay. If she comes in, we'll hear from her. Beth Cadoon, welcome back to the committee. Yeah, go ahead. Thank you.
Members of the committee, my name is Beth Cadoon. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and we strongly oppose this bill, as this will make Minnesota a tax outlier and negatively impact our state's businesses and our economic growth. At 10.85%, Minnesota would have the fourth highest rate in the nation, just below New York, Hawaii, and California. I would note that actually Minnesota imposes higher taxes than some of those other states. California doesn't have an estate tax. Hawaii and New York actually have a higher threshold before their estate tax kicks in, and they all have lower corporate tax rates. New York and California also have the most domestic net out-migration than any other states, so not necessarily states that we want to model after. This tax will greatly impact many businesses, as most are pass-through entities paying their business taxes through the individual income tax. This high tax will mean less revenue available to reinvest back in their employees and companies. Its profit is what allows them to hire more workers, invest in new equipment, and grow their businesses. This high tax will also negatively impact talent retraction and create an even larger financial disincentive for upper income taxpayers to remain in our state. Minnesota is moving in the opposite direction of 22 other states that have lowered their tax rates since 2021. There was a handout in your packet that should show you a map of those states, plus list the 9 other states that do not actually have an income tax at all. At 10.85%, Minnesota would be over twice as high as the median state's top individual income tax rate that is now 5%. The reliance on a smaller, mobile segment of our state's population and on more volatile taxes puts the stability of our state's budget at risk. Good tax policy recommends a system with a broad base and low rates in order to minimize economic impact and for greater fiscal stability for our budget. The trend we are seeing for Minnesota is not positive, as Minnesota is lagging in national growth and has lost population to other states in all but 2 years since 2001. But unfortunately, the pace is quickening. From 2010 to 2019, the average annual net out-migration was a loss of 2,378 people. Last year, Minnesota ranked 42nd in the nation with a loss of 19,400 people. This new high tax rate would unfortunately create an even greater incentive to relocate from Minnesota. With the increased ability to work remotely and the tax gap widening between Minnesota and neighboring and peer states, in an ever-increasingly competitive business climate, Minnesota should be looking at lowering our income tax rates, not raising them, and we urge you to oppose this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is Kelly Martinson, and Gavin Hansen is on deck.
Good afternoon, Chair Gomez and members of the committee. My name is Kelly Martinson, and I work with Kids Count on Us. I have the honor of telling the stories of the hundreds of child care providers, teachers, and parents struggling to provide child care, struggling to afford and find child care, and struggling to make a living working in child care. I'm here today to speak on behalf of those providers, parents, teachers, and Minnesota's kids in support of HF 442, which modifies income tax rates and brackets, notably including a fifth-tier tax bracket for those who earn substantially more than the average Minnesotan. Child care in Minnesota is balancing on a very thin thread, and in many areas of the state, that thread has already broken. The issue is quite simple. Child care is expensive to provide, just like K-12 education is expensive to provide. For decades, we have kept the price of child care more affordable for parents by paying teachers, who are largely women and often women of color, poverty wages. Child care workers make an average of just $12 to $13 an hour. Some child care providers are literally working for free to keep their doors open for their communities. Others are actually pouring their own money into their centers to be able to care for our youngest Minnesotans. Child care providers are struggling to staff their centers because they cannot compete with the wages being offered by Target or Walmart. The only way they can pay their teachers more is to raise rates for parents who are already paying substantial amounts of their income for child care. Public funding is necessary to bridge the gap between what parents can afford and what teachers deserve to earn. This funding can make child care affordable so that no family pays more than 7% of their income for child care, ensure it is high quality for all Minnesota kids, and make it a career for teachers that they can afford to stay in. We often hear there's not enough money to fund childcare, but we know that Minnesota is a wealthy state with more than enough resources to care for all of us. During the pandemic, wealthier Minnesotans did very, very well. They also do very well when we're not in a pandemic. As you said in this committee just a few weeks ago, Chair Gomez, the reason we have the unprecedented surplus we have is because of economic inequality, because the wealthiest Minnesotans have made even more money off the labor of those working in grocery stores, healthcare, and especially those working in our early childhood system. Excuse me. The resources are there, and this tax bill is more than fair. It sets the highest tax bracket rate at 10.85%, 5%, which is less than the percentage of the family income that most families pay for childcare. Many families pay much more than 10.85% of their income. Some pay as much as 50% of their income for childcare. And some simply stop working because they cannot afford childcare at all. We have the resources. This bill would raise billions each biennium, which could fully fund childcare. I urge you to support HF 442 so we can use those resources to fund our children's futures. Thank you.
Thank you. Gavin Hansen. And then on deck is Martha Njolo-Mole.
And Madam Chair, we're taking questions at the end.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Gavin Hansen, and I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Business Partnership, which represents many of Minnesota's largest employers. Minnesota currently enjoys a historic surplus of roughly $17.6 billion. The state's rainy day fund is full. Simply stated, raising taxes is completely unnecessary. And for many businesses and hardworking Minnesotans, it will be economically harmful. Currently, Minnesota's top individual tax rate is the sixth highest in the nation. If House File 442 becomes law, creating a fifth-tier income tax, it would propel Minnesota to fourth highest income tax rate in the nation, behind only New York, Hawaii, and California. This would seriously harm the state's competitiveness, discourage investment in the state, and further solidify Minnesota's reputation for having a hostile tax climate, all while the state is sitting on a historic $17.6 billion surplus. Of course, this is merely one of many of taxes increases being debated at the Capitol right now. Others include a payroll tax on the employers and employees of over $1.5 billion, 1% sales tax increase in the 7-county metro area, a 75-cent delivery tax on every taxable delivery, motor vehicle tax increases, and tap fee hikes. We urge you to consider the cumulative impact these policies will have on Minnesotans. Looking outside of Minnesota, policymakers in other states are reducing taxes. Last year, 11 states enacted personal income tax reductions. The year prior, another 13 states enacted reductions. Our neighbor, Iowa, reduced their taxable bracket from 9 to 4 and lowered their top tax rate from 8.53% to 6%. Our member companies and their employees, like many Minnesota businesses, are competing regionally and globally. Minnesota has among the highest tax rates in the nation for personal income, corporate income, business property, and sales taxes. A new fifth-tier income tax will only make Minnesota more of a tax outlier, which will inhibit our ability to recruit a skilled workforce and drive investment out of the state. Instead of increasing income taxes, we urge you to consider tax policies that help Minnesota businesses remain competitive. We look forward to continuing working with our members of this committee to attain those goals. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Up next is Martha Njolo-Mole, and on deck is Ben Baglio. Welcome to the committee. Please just introduce yourself as you get started with your testimony, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Martha Njolo-Mole. I am an economist at the Center of the American Experiment. Like the previous testifier, I'm here to speak in opposition to House File 442. Minnesota already has some of the highest income tax rates in the country, and we also have a very progressive income tax system. If adopted, HF 442 will make us even less competitive and depress economic growth. Just to comment on what one of the previous testifiers has said, I do agree with a lot of people in this room that childcare is very expensive for parents in Minnesota. Childcare is actually more expensive here compared to a lot of states. But the truth is also that we do spend quite a lot of money in this state compared to a lot of states. And all of that spending hasn't managed to alleviate a lot of our socioeconomic woes. So it's highly unlikely that if we spend some more, we are going to solve the childcare crisis. And the big reason for that is because childcare is expensive because of our strict regulations. Minnesota currently spends, according to data from the U.S. Census Bureau, in 2019, Minnesota had the fourth highest spending in the country. So we are both a high spending and a high tax rate. Raising taxes is not something we have been doing. I would like to also say that a lot of research generally shows that high tax rates don't necessarily lead to higher revenues. This is because tax revenues are usually an outcome of economic growth. So if you want to have higher revenues, we'd actually do better by lowering our tax rates and growing Minnesota's economy. I know the governor has been worried for a couple of months now about attracting workers in the state. This is something that businesses are having an issue with. The truth is that we need people to come and work here, and we also need people to come and invest here. But in order to get those people, we need to make the state an income, an attractive place for people to move to. But so far, that's something we've been losing. We lose a lot of people to low-tax states like Florida. We lose especially high-skilled and high-income workers. These are people that pay the majority of our income taxes. So if we do create a fifth-year income tax bracket, we're only going to make this trend even worse. We have a $17.5 billion surplus. This is a historic opportunity for us to lower taxes and create an attractive state for people to want to come to. This bill does just the opposite of that. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up is Ben Baglio.
Good afternoon, Chair Gomez and members of the committee. My name is Ben Baglio, and I'm testifying today on behalf of the Minnesota Nurses Association, whose more than 22,000 members make up 4 out of every 5 registered nurses working at the bedside in hospitals across our state. I'm here today to testify in support of House File 442, which would help ensure that Minnesota's top earners pay taxes in accordance with the wealth that our state has helped them accrue. MNA is concerned about growing inequities and rising corporate profits at a time when so many are struggling to access health care, child care, housing, or education that they need to live a healthy and sustainable life. Raising taxes on the incomes of the highest earners, the millionaires, would help create a more just and equitable state tax code, one that reflects the efforts that working families in Minnesota put in every day to keep our state running. MNA's members put their physical and mental health on the line for our fellow Minnesotans at their most vulnerable moments. We want the state to do the same, to better prioritize the needs of people, and we can do that by establishing a state tax code that asks the most fortunate to pay their fair share, and in return, better support our state's collective health and well-being. MNA believes that these revenue increases are essential to addressing Minnesota's pressing health care needs, including the ongoing mental health crisis, as well as other investments to support working families, like investments in childcare, public education, workforce supports, and transportation. We hope that the legislature will take the opportunity before us today to ensure that a more equitable tax code, and we believe that this bill would help get us there. With that, I'd just like to thank the author of this bill, and also thank you, Chair Gomez, and members of the committee for your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Baglio. Next up, Mark Haveman. On deck, Eric Bernstein. She's here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Mark Haveman. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Center for Fiscal Excellence. In my testimony today, I'd like to share some information on the current degree of progressivity in our takes on our state tax system, and also offer a comment pertaining to some a body of recent tax policy research that I think is very relevant to this bill. In your meeting materials, you have a handout from us with 3 charts. The first 2 are from our latest National Individual Income Tax Comparison Study, which is, to our knowledge, the nation's only effective tax rate study on state individual income taxation. The first table shows that Minnesota already has one of the most progressive state income tax systems in the nation, as measured by the effective tax rate differential between taxpayers at different income levels. The second provides more color on state progressivity by showing our national rankings at different filer income levels. As you can see, we are near the bottom of the nation at the lowest income levels, rising to 36 to 46% above the national average at the highest income levels among states with an income tax. The third table comes from the Department of Revenue's Tax Incidence Study and shows that the share of income tax collections for the highest earners have grown steadily over the past 20 years, yet the share of state household income represented by these earners have essentially been flat, if not declined, over that period. It's been well established that the United States has one of the most progressive tax systems in the world, yet at the same time features some of the highest degrees of income inequality and weakest transfer and social welfare programming. Scholars have asked why this is. They have found that progressive policies succeed within a larger political economy that is more favorable to business. Among other things, that includes the tax code. The most generous welfare and redistributive governments rely more heavily on regressive taxation, recognizing it as a way to generate revenues needed for social spending and investments without harming economic growth. The converse is also true. Countries with stronger progressive tax codes and more punitive business taxation have triggered stronger and more aggressive resistance to social welfare policies and related spending. These findings are from national tax policy investigations, but arguably we would say these findings have as much or more relevance with respect to subnational taxation and its open borders. In conclusion, we have never been more reliant on individual income taxation and more reliant on the highest income earners in the process. From the standpoint of attracting capital and talent, ensuring balance and stability in the revenue system, and supporting the type of social welfare spending investments on the agenda this year, Minnesota is in danger of playing the same policy card once too often. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next is Eric Bernstein. And on deck, I believe Liotta Goodney has joined us, and so we'll hear your testimony next. Welcome to the committee.
Hi, Chair Gomez, members of the committee. My name is Eric Bernstein, and I am the director of We Make Minnesota, which is a coalition of labor and community groups united in support of a sufficient and equitable state budget. Thank you for the opportunity to share our support for HF 442, which would create a new top marginal income tax bracket of 10.85% on incomes above $500,000 for single filers and $1 million for those filing jointly. Our coalition is happy to see revenue raisers up for discussion despite a surplus that grants the false impression that Minnesota state and local governments are adequately funded. The truth is that two-thirds of the surplus is one-time money, and Minnesota has many unmet public investment needs. Minnesota's price of government has fallen substantially in recent decades. If we funded government at 1990s levels, we would have $13 billion more this biennium. Our primary concern about this proposal is that it is somewhat poorly targeted. According to the updated revenue analysis included with today's materials, HF 442's millionaire bracket would affect only the top 0.8% of all Minnesota income taxpayers. This excludes many very high-income Minnesotans that could easily afford to pay more to fund essential public goods and services. It also means that the proposed fifth tier would raise less revenue at a higher rate than would be possible with a lower threshold targeted, for example, at the top 10, 5, or 3%. Recent discussions in committee have suggested that there is bipartisan support for progressive revenue sources. This narrow high income tax increase limits the revenue raise and risks defining high income at a threshold that is more akin to super high income or super duper high income, if you will. Many of the objections to this bill will reference the relationship between tax rates and economic competitiveness. First, I think it's worth just saying that our tax rates are marginal, which means that this would raise just $1 for every $100 earned over $1 million of taxable income. So the individual response that we can expect, I think, needs to be somewhat tempered by that reality. On the broader question, I would just remind the committee that there are many studies discussing the relationship between tax rates and economic growth with a wide range of results on this question. One frequent flaw in these estimations is that they examine the impact of taxes on economic performance without considering the expenditures that these taxes enable. Once raised, tax dollars are not simply removed from the economy, but are in fact spent directly back into our state, where they finance valuable public goods and services, create jobs, and sustain communities. In fact, recent data from the Bureau of Economic Analysis showed that Minnesota has recorded the highest economic growth of any comparable state in the region for the past two quarters on record, while South Dakota, our famously low-tax neighbor, has their economy has shrunk for the last three quarters in a row. Mm-hmm. So I think that there can be a lot of speculation about tax rates and economic growth, but over the long term, Minnesota does have the fastest growing economy in the Midwest among comparable states of a comparable size. And we've had higher tax rates for much of that time. Finally, and most importantly, economic growth is just one very narrow metric by which to judge the health of our state. In addition to higher growth, Minnesota has also had lower poverty, higher wages, and longer life expectancy than most of our neighbors, this in part owing to our investments in healthcare, education, and many other important public goods. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, Liotta Goodney. Welcome to the committee. Please just introduce yourself as you're going ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Gomez and members of the committee. I'm Liotta Goodney, age 72 years old, a retired CPA, and a leader with Isaiah. I continue to work part-time with a few elders who need help with their finances and managing their lives. I'm glad to learn that you are considering another tax bracket with a higher tax rate for high-income people in Minnesota. As you know, there are three large components of the overall taxes paid by Minnesotans: the property tax, the sales tax, including the gas tax, and the income tax are the major components. It is really important that we have an overall tax structure in Minnesota that is progressive, so that those who have benefited the most from living, working, and owning businesses in Minnesota pay the most. According to the 2021 tax incidence study, which a previous testifier referred to, and is done by the Minnesota Department of Revenue, our current overall structure, including all sources of taxes, is relatively flat. It ranges from 11.1 to approximately 12%. In fact, the top 1% of individuals, those households making over $600K, pay an overall rate of 11.5%. That is lower than everyone else except people making between $30,000 and $40,000 a year. This proposed tax bracket would make our overall tax system more progressive by increasing the income tax for those who are most able to pay. We desperately need the additional tax dollars from a steady stream of taxes going forward. Paid family and medical leave, affordable child care, and education funding will substantially improve life for my daughter and my grandchild. A living wage for personal care workers of all sorts will benefit my clients because there will be more people who can afford to do that work. And for myself, I'm looking forward to being able to use the Minnesota Care public option to purchase affordable health insurance for my brother-in-law, who is not yet eligible for Medicare. I urge you to consider the overall rate structure in Minnesota and make it more equitable by adding the additional bracket, so that we can fully fund the things that people need, no matter their address, their social group, or their income, and continue to have a stable budget into the future. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. So that concludes those people that I had signed up. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on this bill who's here? All right, not seeing any, we will then go to member discussion. First up, Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Microphone's still not working.
We can hear you, Representative Kosnick.
Good. First off, a general question. Is there a section in this A1 amendment that talks about child care? Because I didn't see it in here.
I'm going to just rely on your ability to read the bill. And if you would like to make a statement, go ahead and make a statement, please.
To the author, the question is there, you know, this is, I believe, after the A1 amendment, it's $1 million tax increase, revenue raising, roughly.
Representative Herr.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. Representative Kosnick, yes, it's the filing jointly that's taxable of $1 million.
Representative Kosnick.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to double check that. But is that $1 million that's being raised, taxes being raised in this bill, is it tied to a specific expenditure like child care?
Just to clarify, Representative Kosnick, we do have a revenue estimate. It raises way more than $1 million, but I'll just go to Representative Herr to answer the question about dedicated revenue. But again, you can read the bill. I think you see that there's no dedication of the revenue in this bill. Representative Herr.
Chair Gomez, Representative Kosnick, I would love to be able to tie this to specific revenues that I would love to see it go to. But the truth is that we don't do that for the taxes that we raise. Just like within cities, when they raise property taxes, they don't tell you what your property taxes, how that is going towards. Mm-hmm. So this actually gives us more leeway in deciding where there's the greatest need, where those taxes will be applied to. But given if it had all a power and authority, I would love to be able to put it to specific, because it would go to the things I think are important. But I didn't do that, so thank you.
Representative Kosnick.
Well, thanks for clarifying that, and that's the way I understood it, that it is not tied to a specific expenditure, and some of the testifiers may be a little disappointed that it's not, given their testimony. But I will say that, you know, it's not a bad bill except for about three lines in there, 1.13, 2.1, and 2.9. Otherwise, I kind of like expanding the income eligibility limits in the lower tax brackets. And I, you know, this bill obviously, from my perspective and the perspective of constituents that I represent just have a very difficult time understanding why, with such a huge surplus, one time or not, with tax revenues overall coming to the state increasing, that number one, they haven't seen a tax refund or rebate to them, but to the contrary, we're sitting here in the tax committee in this historic time and being asked, Minnesotans are being asked to pay more taxes, just unbelievable to me. So if you could get rid of those three lines in there that I mentioned, you might get my support. Otherwise, I think we're moving in the wrong direction.
Representative Joy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, when I look at this and I see tax revenue again, and I was up in district all over the Easter break here, and I'm right next to North Dakota. And North Dakota's looking at 0% to 1.5% personal income tax. And here's Minnesota over here. We're going to add another fifth tier because we need to do this. I mean, when you live literally 15 minutes from the border, I mean, people are going to move. And, you know, to be a business owner and come back over here and say, you know what, I'm going to be an entrepreneur and build in Minnesota because it's good? No. I'm going to go to North Dakota, because here's the thing. When we do this and we raise income tax on the wealthy, as we want to call it, and we continue to do this, and like for anybody that owns a business, we're going to pass that on to the business. And it's going to hurt the lower income people that come in and shop at our stores. It's going to affect them. So when we do this, we pass it on. I don't absorb it. I pass it on. Anybody pass. This is, we need to change the way we're looking at taxes and how we got to fix this, because the bordering states, you know, Minnesota might show that they got more millionaires and more this, that. Okay, North Dakota and South Dakota don't have a professional football team. We do. You know, so we bring business here because of that. But I think this is ridiculous that we're continuing to tax people. And, you know, Kevin O'Leary says it, and he's made comments about Minnesota and stuff like that, and we're hearing it from North Dakota. And that's why he's over there investing money and creating business. So.
Thank you. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just thank you, Representative Herr, for bringing this bill forward. And I know, just to put it in context, I think the average income and household income in my district is about $55,000. And I know to Representative Kosnick's point that we don't dedicate revenue, but as the Ways and Means Chair, you see the global picture of what it's like in Minnesota, and you think about what we do with our budget. And I know my colleagues across the aisle have talked about full exemption on Social Security, have talked about rebate checks, have talked about a number of things, but you can't have that conversation in a vacuum of talking about raising revenue. And we think about the idea of how we raise revenue, and I think this is exactly the kind of bill we need to be looking at. We need to be looking at how we raise revenue in a way that really thinks about the future of our state and investing in the things we care about and making sure that we're raising revenue in a way that this bill, for folks making over $1 million a year, a small increase, as we heard from the testifiers today. And I think this is exactly what we need to bring to the table in order to be able to even have the conversation about the other things we're talking about. Because with a one-time surplus, I know we brush that away, and it seems easy for us to say, well, we have a surplus, but it's one time, but we should be able to figure out. You can't. You can't budget into the future. I look across the table and I see the chair of education and early childhood and housing. You cannot budget long-term to solve our problems on a one-time surplus. And we have to have the conversation about raising revenue in this tax committee in order to have the conversation about funding our nursing homes, things that we've brought up on the House floor that we've tried to suspend the rules on. Like, you cannot have a conversation about something, funding something in perpetuity, if you don't also have a conversation about how you are going to pay for it into the future, because that is dishonest and not a way that we can think about budgeting here in the state of Minnesota. And so I am really glad that we are having this bill heard today and being considered as we think about all the other things we need to do today and into the future.
Thank you. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Herr. I obviously do not support this bill. I feel like I'm a broken record talking about our competitiveness all the time, members, but one of the testifiers mentioned that this would probably put us into the fourth highest in personal income. By my estimate, it's actually we would be number three in the country for highest income tax. And members, this not only affects like uber wealthy people who make a lot of dividend income. A lot of our businesses in Minnesota pay their taxes through personal pass-through taxes. Businesses are the drivers of economic growth. To Representative Olson's point, we need long-term budget strategies. And one of those ways we do it is creating economic growth. And we are hurting ourselves, members. All the tax increases in the world aren't going to create the revenue we need in this state. We need to expand the economy. We need to have investment. We need to attract talent. And this bill will do the opposite. We are number three for personal income taxes. In Minnesota, we already treat capital gains at the same as personal income. So if someone sells their business, if someone sells their home, if someone sells their farm, they are now going to be taxed at the third highest rate in the country. And so many businesses pay through pass-through income, and they will be hurt by this. And that then gets passed on to the customer, as Representative Joy talked about. So this is going to hurt the families in our districts who are going to have even higher inflation in the grocery store, in the local cafe, in wherever, because businesses have to pass this on. So, members, we need to look at policies that will drive economic growth, and that is how we will raise revenue for our state. So I really encourage the committee to take a pass on this, and let's look at reducing taxes in ways that will drive economic growth. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Herr.
Chair Gomez, can I just provide some perspective on the scope of this, just because I hear a lot of conversations from everyone. I just want to be very clear that the impact of this is going to be on 0.8% of all returns. That's 24,200. In perspective, that's, we have 5.7 million people in the state of Minnesota. That's a 0.4% impact on our population. And because we're only, this is only impacting the dollar after the $1 million, again, taxable, not your gross income, your taxable income. That's after you take out all of the things that you get to deduct ahead of time. And that's going to have an average of $9,231 impact on those individuals. So I know we're talking about this as if it is extremely detrimental, but I want us to remember the scope of what this impacts. And I want to reiterate that our state is actually, and anybody who's listened to the state demographer is telling you, our population is growing. It has been growing. The city of St. Paul is over 300,000 now residents. It's the highest it's been in 30 years. And so we keep talking about we're losing residents, but I want to be very clear here that we are actually gaining residents, and our growth is faster than those with lower tax states like North Dakota and Iowa. So yes, we do see changes between people moving between states, but net Minnesota is up. And so I know we are very concerned, but I want us to remember the scope of what we are looking at and the impact that we are looking at. And I know that we are continuing to have conversations about the surplus, but and the lack of understanding of that Minnesotans don't understand. I think Minnesotans are really smart. They do understand. Representative Kosnick's comment on they don't understand why we have the surplus. Because we've all put budgets together for ourselves. And we never make structural changes without knowing where that money is coming from. I'm not going to buy a new car if I got a $1,000 bonus check. I'm not going to go out and buy a new car because that's a bonus check. And so when we understand how finances work, Minnesotans are very smart. They understand. One-time surplus does not allow us to make structural changes in how we spend our money here. And so I just want to remember to kind of focus us in on what this bill is actually doing and the impact that this bill has.
Thank you, Representative Herr. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Chair. I want to thank the testifiers who raised the point about how the revenue that gets raised is linked to the investments that our state makes, because to my mind that's completely within the scope of the work that we're doing. And actually, I guess it makes me think about so often in spending committees, I feel like I hear from our colleagues on the other side of the aisle saying that the spending that is being proposed to invest in people in different areas in education and housing is not sustainable. They make references to taxation that's often brought up. And I think it is appropriate for us to be thinking from a big picture perspective. And the big picture is that our state has taken a different path than the other states around us and has done really well because of it. There's a reason that we have all those professional sports teams. That was not true multiple decades ago. Our state got on a different path in the 1950s and is a state that has been richer both materially and also in terms of health and wellness than those states around us. We've gained 5,000 residents from North Dakota in the last couple of years. We've gained 2,000 residents from Iowa in the last couple of years. When people are deciding where they want to locate their businesses and themselves, they want to locate them in places that have a rich quality of life and a place that will, in fact, make them rich, which Minnesota does, because we have a really strong economy and have for years because of how it's built. Our state is built on the idea that when we invest in people, that is how we expand the economic base. That is how we make ourselves competitive. And I would argue that certainly an area that I've focused a lot on, that's true in those early years. We know there's no bigger payoff than having high quality early childhood education. That's a huge need. We know that that's true in K-12 education. It's true when people are stably housed. It's true in a variety of areas. And it is well within the scope to recognize that revenue being linked to that is absolutely a key. And so Representative Hurd, thank you so much for your leadership in pushing this.
Representative Koznick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name was mentioned a couple times. Otherwise, I generally wouldn't speak more than once. You know, one of the testifiers had talked about advocating for a sufficient and equitable state budget. The problem is with raising, continuing to raise taxes with increasing revenues already, is that the amount of spending we're doing is not sustainable. The revenues are there. We don't have a revenue problem. We continue to add more and more spending and more programs ongoing with sometimes one-time funding, and that's what the problem is, and that's what taxpayers have a hard time understanding. They keep paying more taxes, higher taxes. They're being asked to pay more taxes in a variety of ways outside of even just this bill. And this, I'm talking more in general, not just if you happen to be blessed and make over a certain threshold that's in this bill. All taxpayers are being asked to pay more and more, whether, you know, we could go through the whole litany of the tax revenue raisers that the DFL is proposing this session, and that's what's hard to understand. The state is not short on money right now, but yet we're being asked to pay more here, pay more there, and in this bill just happens to epitomize what's being proposed by the DFL. So we don't have a revenue problem. It is absolutely a spending problem, and proposing new and ongoing spending with one-time money, one-time surplus with long-term expenditures. So that's what Minnesotans have a hard time understanding.
Representative Weiner.
Are they working or not?
Mine seems to work. I don't know.
Yeah, just yell like I do.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah, just please yell at us. Representative Weiner.
So, at some basic numbers, and there's been a lot of them thrown around today. Bureau of Labor Statistics, 5.3% increase in wages in Minnesota. We also have almost 10% inflation, which means that people's wages are actually going backwards. We've also seen, and to Representative Koznick's point, about a 35% increase in spending. So once again, this is not a tax issue, this is a spending issue. We can't keep spending our way out of a problem. We've also seen in this committee and other committees tax credits to pull businesses in order to build our economy, pull industry in, we need to offer them tax credits. It was a selling point for many of these projects. And yet here we are saying we're going to raise taxes. So if we take those millionaires in that top tax bracket, and they are the most, can afford the most to leave the state, who picks up the tab when they're gone? Once the spending is there, once the spending's in place and government increases even more, and the millionaires and the businesses decide to leave, because we've seen businesses leave. Corporations have left the state because they can go to other areas, other countries where their taxes are lower. Who picks up the tab? That's what my concern is with this bill and with spending and government growth as a whole. We end up hurting the people that they can at least afford to pay these bills. So my question, I guess, is, going back to the top tier, we've seen an increase in projected spending, but how do you substitute when they leave? Where is that tax money going to come from if the spending is in place?
Representative Herr.
Chair Gomez, Representative Weiner, I think that we already answered that question. We are having more people coming into our state than leaving. So there's people coming in. And I just want to address the, we have a spending problem and not a revenue problem. Well, I'd like for you all to tell officers who I only had $100 million to pay in this biennium for their duty disability. I don't have ongoing money for that in their pension bill. And these are officers who served our state and are out on duty disability, and their plan is going bankrupt because we can't make fundamental changes to their pension plan because we don't have the money to pay for that going forward. So then tell me so that's a spending problem? I thought we need to pay for that somehow. Tell teachers who are now asking for pensions. You all probably got all the emails. I did thousands of emails about teachers and their pensions. We have a spending problem. We clearly need to make some fundamental changes about revenues we're bringing in. It's not an issue of spending. We don't have the money to actually address all the issues that we are experiencing right now. So if you can all tell me how I'm going to tell officers that I only have one biennium of money to pay for the duty disability because we won't raise taxes on the wealthiest people, who is only going to be 24,000 people impacted. I don't know how we tell them that we have a spending problem when they're feeling like we're not spending enough. So I don't know. I guess I think the answers, the question's already been answered, that people are moving in, so we don't have to worry about that. The other problem is that this is not a spending problem. This is a revenue problem, and we have to balance both. We can't keep talking about taking care of people who serve our state and then say, but we won't raise the revenues to actually take care of them. Like Representative Olson said, you can't have a conversation of spending and giving money back without saying how are we going to raise the revenue to sustain that.
Thank you. You good? Representative Weiner.
So in a conversation just recently with an economist, the question came up, at what point do taxes drive people and businesses out of a state? And the obvious answer was, look at California. We are heading in the same direction as they are. When you talked about the population, according to what I've seen, we've lost about 20,000 people. So have we increased in some areas? Sure we have. But overall, we've lost people. And we saw a decrease of businesses, primarily small businesses, I think about 3,000 to 5,000 in the last 2 years. Some of that's COVID, but some of it's businesses moving to a more equitable tax states. So when we talk about spending, this seems to be a disconnect between government spending, our budgets, which have come up many times. It's not our budgets, it's taxpayers' money. And when they're suffering out there, because we've heard this a time and time again, that we need to do something for these people right now, maybe we need to stop taking money from them in the first place.
Representative Swedzinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a question to maybe fiscal staff real quick. So in my sheet, I've got that in 2024 and 2025, it'll bring in about $2 billion, and then about roughly the same in 26, 27. Is that simply the total amount the amendment is 500 million. That's not, is that just the increase from the increase of their current, what percent of the state budget would be paid for by this 0.08 or these 24,000 filers? It's not just 500, it's just 500 million additional as far as a percentage from our state coffers. Do we have some of those numbers on a tier? Like what is the total that this new tier would pay in taxable revenue to the state?
So Representative Swedzinski, I assume that those percentages aren't available at this moment, and I'm sure that Ms. Templin can follow up. But if you look at actually at this piece from that Haveman, Mr. Haveman put in the in our packet, there's sort of a little table from the incident study at the bottom that might get at some of your questions. Ms. Templin, did you have anything additional to add at this time, or is this sort of a follow-up?
Madam Chair, Representative Swedzinski, yes, what you see is the estimated revenue gain of the 10.85% proposed fifth tier at roughly $280.9 million and about $250 million in fiscal 25. The February forecast has, under current law, individual income tax revenue collections. The total for the fiscal 24-25 biennium is about $32.66 billion. And And so this additional revenue that is projected with the fifth tier would be on top of that $32.66 billion.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
Representative Swiecinski.
Thank you, Ms. Templin. And just, you know, just a general, you know, comment. You know, if this was the only thing coming at our job creators, you know, I think maybe, you know, it maybe wasn't as big of a deal, but you know, we've got a lot of other things. We've got the environmental bill that's going to be coming after business owners and entrepreneurs. That's going to put a lot more auspice, a lot more cost that this faces doing business. Paid family leave taxes that, you know, are going to just kind of come out of the middle of nowhere in multiple billions of dollars. You know, and the fine representative who's carrying this bill said, "Well, this isn't a spending problem." Well, folks, it is a spending problem. You know, I like to build word pictures for people, and I think, you know, one of the things I want you to imagine, this is about 15 or 20 years ago, you were at the movie theater with that special friend of yours, and it was the movie Titanic, and there's that one scene where the ship's going and the people are out, the lifeboats have already been kind of released, and people are kind of looking back at the ship and seeing the glistening lights. And you could look through the windows and you could see people running back and forth in the windows. And then they cut to the base of the ship. And inside the ship, the lights are still on. And there's these workers that are in the electrical room. And they're running back and forth as the trip trips down and the lights shut off in that part of the ship. And that worker is running back and forth and trying to keep the lights on. And all of a sudden, he gets electrocuted. And, you know, oftentimes, you know, our state government, you look at what's going internationally with our currency, you look at what's going on at the federal government level, you know, massive amounts of borrowing, massive amounts of a potential tax increase. Hey, we're just going to keep that, you know, that it's kind of like that worker, you know, all of us here, in the minority in the state government, we're just going to keep those lights on, run back and forth and rack and forth. And this tax increase is kind of like that worker running back and forth. Hey, we want to just keep the lights on for a little bit longer as the ship's going down. And, you know, we're seeing, you know, we've heard a lot of back, you know, the conversations happen about peak oil and peak this and that. You know, we're in an era of peak big government.
Peak oil.
And government has gotten about as big as it possibly can. We've borrowed billions, we've borrowed trillions, we've borrowed this, we've borrowed that, we've mortgaged our children's future. Let's not mortgage their opportunity to live here in Minnesota as well. And by doing that, by raising taxes on across the board, whether it's a paid family leave tax, whether it's this tax, whether it's increasing $10 million in the energy bill of ratepayers so that we can have more government programs. And folks, it doesn't work. You know, I think Margaret Thatcher said it best. She said the problem with socialism is that sooner or later you run out of other people's money. And folks, well, we're just dipping back into that pool again and saying, you know what, even though government's got a $19.5 billion surplus, even though we're already going to potentially raise taxes by multiple billions of dollars to grow government, to grow really dependence on government, it's not enough. We need to do more. You know, let's find efficient ways to do government. Let's actually learn to focus our efforts on how do you grow an economy, grow jobs, have an environment where, you know, I believe since 2015, Minnesota has seen a net people leaving, a net amount of people leaving our state. Mm-hmm. And who's coming and who's going? You know, what I'd like to see what the income levels of who's coming and who's going. Because, you know, where I come from, you know, when we want to get after cigarettes in our state, what do? Well, we want to raise taxes on cigarettes so that people won't smoke them. What does that do? Well, it drives the purchase of those cigarettes outside of the state boundaries. And then we worry about, hey, let's grow government. Let's hire 6 or 8 people in enforcement so that we can clamp down on those folks that are driving across state lines and bringing cigarettes back. Well, if raising taxes fundamentally keeps people from smoking cigarettes, well, then raising taxes fundamentally keeps people from wanting to do business in the state of Minnesota. If raising taxes on cigarettes keeps people from smoking, then raising taxes on business owners and people that we care about, we want to encourage people to grow their business here. We want to encourage retirees to live here, to to a ripe old age. We don't want to penalize people for dying in the state of Minnesota. And that's potentially what this is going to do. This is going to penalize people to die in Minnesota. And, you know, there is wisdom in age, not disdain. And I would encourage folks to not include this in any bills that move forward. You've made some good decisions, Madam Chair, and I think it would be wise to maybe just kind of let this one just pass on down the line. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Lee.
I was probably too young to watch Titanic when it came out, but do you want to say
burn.
Since then, you know, I noticed it was the first class people who got all the lifeboats, and they weren't full, and they were the ones that survived. And so I do want to note that, you know, we've done really well in the last couple of years weathering the pandemic because we had really good leadership. We had some of the lowest unemployment rates of states across the country. And so, you know, I just want to say, what's really important is to really focus on the impact of with this policy, right? Rep. Herr has pointed out that we have a targeted number of people who this will impact, and so I want to make sure folks understand this is not the doomsday, like, tax everybody bill that, you know, folks would want you to think. And I also want to make sure we also remember, like, the impact of this, right? We have to talk about investment in childcare, in our public goods, in nursing homes, because that's what happens, you know, when you have good government and good policy. And so I just want to commend Chair Herr for this, because, again, like, Chair Olson has said, you know, we need to think about the other side of things and making sure that we pay for the things we care about and pay for public goods. And again, maybe if you excessively use a public good, you should probably also pay for it. And so I will offer that and turn it back to the chair.
All right. Not only Representative Sudzinski can create word pictures for all of us, so we appreciate that. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was also going to go with the Titanic metaphor, but I'll skip that part of my my talk. I mean, this is somewhat of an interesting conversation because we could basically copy and paste everything that has been said against this bill, against the fourth tier that we talked about. Well, I wasn't here, but was talked about a decade ago. And so we know what happens when we add this, and it's good stuff. We get more money that we can use responsibly to help public services. And since, nonpartisan staff can correct me if I'm wrong, I think by 2019 we've seen 20,000 plus filers go into that highest tier. We've added to that highest tier, so people aren't just like fleeing our state. We know that's, you know, that's not happening. We can't just cry wolf every time that there's some sort of increase in our tax system. And I want to go even further and say taxes are not in it of themselves evil. They are ideally an expression of our society, what we think is good, how we want to live, how we want to relate to each other. We take a part of all of our incomes and we fund a society that we think is best. It's a wonderful tool that we have as people who live together in a state. And it crosses a whole bunch of lines, from education to bank regulation to literacy to the Secretary of State's office making sure businesses are actually businesses, to financial institutions making sure that they're responsible. I mean, Social Security, which we've talked about a lot. These are things that we have because we have taxes, that we can't just talk about them in the evil sense of the word. And I actually would agree that things like vice taxes are not the great way because of the same reason. Taxes are what we do to fund the things that are important to us. And I think there are a lot of things. We have a trifecta right now, the DFL, because people, we're not, you know, we're honest with people about what we want to do, right? We want to fund programs. We want to help childcare. We want to help have more housing. We want to have more youth and family services. We've told all these people this. They understand it costs money, and they voted us into office. And so I think we're being true to who we are, who Minnesota is, in having these kind of bills. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Koznick.
Yeah.
Thank you, Madam. Yep, again.
He said it, not me. I would never. Representative
I'm trying to kill some time for my good friend, Representative Hornstein. So we don't beat up on his bill too much.
He's ready. He wants to talk about tax havens and all these things.
And I appreciate that the previous committee member speaking mentioned the fourth tier, because that was one of the things that I had forgot to mention in my previous comments, Chair Davids. But the fourth tier was added and enacted in 2013, and so we got one member's opinion on that. I wonder if the author has some additional comments on that, but I think it goes to show that either the fourth tier, it was said that it's good stuff, but apparently it's not good enough, because now we're adding more taxes in a fifth tier. But I think the general conversation isn't even adding a fifth tier. It's just that we're adding more taxes in this bill, but also across the board. One of the other committee members, said a boomsday tax everybody bill. That's not what this is. You're right. It's not taxing everybody. But this is a session where the Democrats are taxing everybody on everything. And it just goes back to that. There isn't a point in time, I don't think, that we would get to create enough tax revenue for Democrats to spend. And that's what I think the problem is here, and where the disconnect is where there's a point where we need to say government can only do so much, and to continue to ask families to continue to pay more is a problem, because I think it robs families and individuals of achieving their best, highest potential and providing for themselves and their own independence and freedoms. And so I wonder if the author has any additional comments on why adding the fourth highest tax bracket, the fourth tier, wasn't good enough in 2013. And the point was also made that there was, honesty in the elections, where we've yet to see the elimination of Social Security income tax that so many across the state on both sides of the aisle ran across. But now we get into the tax committee, and we've seen big opposition and recanting on that from the governor's office all the way down to members of the tax committee of the Democrats that say, no, we're not going to eliminate the Social Security income tax completely. So if the author has some comments on why the fourth tier wasn't successful enough and why that's not good enough, I'd be curious, because I think it was.
Representative Herr.
Chair Gomez, Representative Kosnick, boy, I don't even know where to begin with that question, because I don't think there's an assumption that the fourth tier wasn't good enough. I think that maybe is your own interpretation of what has been said. I think that the fourth tier did just fine, and I think that the point is that everyone thought the sky was going to fall with the fourth tier, and it didn't. And Minnesota continues to grow, and Minnesota continues to do well. Minnesota continues to attract businesses and people here. And so I guess I'm not quite sure how to answer that question, because I don't believe in the same premise that you're laying out. And so that's all I can say, is that the fourth tier, I don't think that it didn't work. I think that, it's like everything in our own lives, right? Because I improve my life in a way, and I say, oh, I'm done. Like when I stopped being poor and a refugee that couldn't barely, didn't know where food was coming the next day, and I got my college education, I didn't think, oh, I did it, it's good enough. No, because we continue to try to do better by people. We continue to try to do better by ourselves. And so then we continue to look at how we improve policies and the work that we do, so that we can continue to improve people's lives. So I don't even think we're operating the same premise of the question that you're asking, so I don't know how to answer that question for you, except for that we will continue to do better as Minnesotans, and I will bet on Minnesotans every day to continue to make those improvements.
Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I think I'll ground us back into the bill we're talking about in front of us, and I want to thank Representative Herr for bringing this forward. Just as a reminder, this is adding another tax bracket just by 1% for those making over $1 million jointly, $600,000 singly. And I know it may seem odd at this time to be doing this, but I think Minnesotans are very smart, and I think they understand that what we have right now on the surplus is one-time money. And it's not one-time money just from this year. It's one-time money from last year and one-time money from the year before that has been sitting there because we didn't take action this last year. And Minnesotans also, and this is what I absolutely love about our state, is we take care of each other. And we know that it costs money to do that. And we also know that the stability of our state for our economy moving forward is what helps us grow. We, for decades, were those job creators. We funded higher ed, so we had the Medtronics, 3Ms show up. And then gradually, we kind of lost focus. We lost focus in our North Star of taking care of each other and investing in things that mattered. And over the years, the cost of government has actually declined. Some people might think that's great, and maybe it is. The problem is, with that came underinvestment. And when we start underinvesting in our future is when we really start getting into problems. As a reminder, 40% of our state budget is our education system. Our businesses, one of the key indicators they come for is not just for our economy, but for an educated workforce. I know they're not coming here because of the weather, and they sure as heck aren't coming here because of our transportation system right now, which is another area that we have drastically underfunded over the last 30 years. The only time we had a gas tax increase was when we had a bridge fall down. That's shameful. And I just want to thank Representative Herr. I don't really even have a question for you. It just means so much to me to know that we're having this discussion about how Minnesotans take care of each other and having that paradigm shift of, instead of going from one budget to the next and saying, hey, what can I get for this money? It's like a teenager hopped up on crack at a flea market. Like, I have this $2 to spend. Let's figure out what we can do with it, versus I'm going somewhere because I want to spend this money. I want to invest in people. This is the policy direction we want to go because we know it's important. We know it's important to take care of our veterans. We know it's important to take care of our seniors in nursing homes. We know it's important to put roofs over people's head, to invest in our education system. And we are willing to figure out what it's going to take to do that, instead of just saying, oh, you know what? This is all I have to spend. Let's figure out what we can get with that. So thank you, Representative Herr, for thinking about the stability and the structural stability of Minnesota going forward, so we can do these good things and continue to grow our economy and make sure that Minnesotans are taken care of and want to stay here. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Joy.
Real quick, Madam Chair, I know this is my second time.
Yep.
One of the things I heard, you know, Representative Olson over there said that, you know, when we've asked to do different things, fund nursing homes, fund more of these things, and we need tax money to do that. We can't just continue to fund things and not have the revenue. You know, when you look at that and you look at, we gave nursing homes $4 million, we can't get rid of Social Security tax, but yet we're okay doing paid family. You know, those are things we got to look at too. Maybe we don't have to move forward with paid family right now, and we could use that money to reduce Social Security tax, or we could do something different for nursing home. So those are some smart things I think we got to do in the tax committee too, is also look at how we can fund the right move and not always have to add onto the tax basis. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Davids.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair. And could Mr. Baglio come down for a question?
Mr. Bolio.
Or what's the name?
I think I said it right.
Yeah. No. Baglio?
Okay, we both said it wrong, but if you could just state your name for the record, please, as you go ahead.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Ben Bolio.
I've been Bolio, okay.
Why is the G in there?
Whoa. Please don't badger the witness. Okay. Representative Davids.
Okay, Madam Chair, I'll lay off. I was so excited during your testimony. First of all, I think that we have several disconnects here, because I thought we were talking about Representative Herr's bill, and it's not her fault we were disconnected, because her bill does what it does. But then we're saying we're going to put more money in child care. Well, doesn't that go like the Education Committee or something? We're going to put more money for nursing. Doesn't that kind of go like to? We weren't talking about the bill. We were disconnected. No fault of the author, of course. But I just got so excited. You said, and I quote, the rich should pay their fair share.
Oh. Oh, here we go.
What is that number?
Thank you. Chair Gomez.
Mr. Bolio.
Representative Davids. I'm not actually a tax policy expert, so I'm not entirely sure what arbitrary number I'd be able to come up with in this hearing on that. But, you know, I think this bill is creating that fifth tier in order to make sure that those who are the highest earners in our state are paying their fair share, which I think when we look at the needs of our state, you know, typically means if you're making more, you're benefiting more, you're probably paying more.
Well, thank you.
Representative Davids.
Now I'm totally depressed. I thought I was going to get that number. We whipped that phrase around like people know what they're talking about, and they don't. So when you said that, you didn't have a number. You didn't have a number for us. I want a number. I hear it. If I hear in this committee one more time that somebody has to pay their fair share, I want the number, and I will always ask for that because you made a statement, and you didn't have a number for it. So I really caution folks to do that. Pay their fair share. What does that mean? It's meaningless. Unless I get a number here at some point. So on the IRS building in Washington, D.C., there's a phrase up. You can go now. You can go. I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I'm used to being chair. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Representative Davids, this is okay, but, like, if a member says something that you want to interrogate, that's fine. But our members of the public, like, I just want us to not be, like, splitting their sort of choice of words apart. So
Madam Chair, if anybody in this committee says anything, it's open for question.
Certainly.
Doesn't have to be a member. The public is going to be open for question too if they say something like that.
Representative Davis.
At the top of the IRS building, the entrance says taxes are what we pay for civilized society. With this bill, I think we are the most civilized society in the United States of America. And just a couple points to make here. We're talking about more people coming in than leaving. Well, you might want to subscribe to a service called How Many Walks? How Many Walks? There's a lot more money leaving the state than coming in, and there are more people leaving than coming in. But if you look at the incomes of those leaving versus the incomes of those coming in, there's really, really quite a disconnect. I'd like to correct my good friend Representative Kosnick for the record here in taxing, because we must be accurate. He made the comment, government or the governor down to the tax committee. The correct statement would have been tax committee way down to the governor. So we just have to make sure how that's phrased there. So one good thing that's come out of this session so far is we're giving my billionaire friends, and I have many of them, my billionaire friends' kids free meals at school. So that, you know, it's not all bad here. So And this bill from Representative Herr is not in, well, we're hearing it today in a vacuum, but it's not in a vacuum. We have many, many bills that we've heard so far. And Chair Gomez, you got quite a job to do for next week to present a tax bill to us with all the needs and with the numbers that you have. When I first heard some of the numbers, I thought it was like trying to suck a watermelon through a garden hose. It's going to be tough. It's going to be very tough. And so I'm very interested to see what comes out next week. So, like I said, we're kind of disconnected. And my good friend Chair Olson of the Ways and Means Committee was saying that you folks on that other side of the aisle, you want all these things. You want Social Security tax relief. When Representative Smith said that we're being honest, no, we're not. Everybody ran on getting rid of the Social Security tax. Or not everybody. Not everybody. A majority.
No.
Yes. In the Senate. Yeah. Well, I'll do my numbers for you. So, but to say that because we want Social Security tax relief and we want rebate checks and we want these things, we could pay for them. I went home over this hallowed, holy last week, Easter. I went home and the people are saying, well, when do we get those, Social Security eliminated? When do we get the rebate checks? When do we? I said, well, you're not going to get it. Plus, you're going to spend $10 billion more. And they were stunned. They were stunned. That's what's going to happen this session. $17.6 billion surplus, plus we're going to blow through that with no relief to anybody, and then we're going to spend another $10 billion. It's just amazing. It's just amazing to me. So, members, I think there's some good advice given a little bit earlier. We need to slow down on some of this stuff because tax policy does make a difference. It does make a difference. And in the tax world, as a rule, if you go dynamically, more is less and less is more. The more you tax, the less you get. The less you tax, the more you get. And that works. It worked in 2011 when we had a $6.2 billion deficit. What did we do? What did I do? I lowered taxes. And 2 years later in June, we were even. It works. This is not the only bad thing going on here, but it's something that has really headed us down the wrong direction. So thank you for your time, and my billionaire friends are just ecstatic that they get free lunches for their kids. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Herr, closing comments.
Thank you, Chair Gomez, and thank you, committee, for a robust discussion. I just wanted to address a couple of things, because I did sit here and I did take a lot of notes from everyone, and I know I'm cutting into Chair Hornstein's time, but I feel like it's important to address. But first, I want to say that I reject the analogy that of Minnesota like a sinking ship with the Titanic. I reject that notion completely, because Minnesota is not a sinking ship. I will bet on Minnesota any day, because Minnesota wants to do right by each other. And so, I think that comparison actually creates a situation in which it looks like we are going in the wrong direction, but Minnesota has actually been going in the right direction. So I was in the private sector for 15 years, and I've lived in many states doing my private sector job. I came from Wisconsin, and yes, when I came from Wisconsin as a fresh college student, yeah, I was one of those low-income people that came in, and maybe somebody really high-income left, and look at I filled their spot, and now I have first-world problems, right? Like, my husband works at does an institutional investment at a bank, and he's worked for some of the most prestigious firms, and like we stopped paying taxes, some of the taxes, by September. He can't contribute anymore in his 401k plan because he exceeds the actual dollar limit. Like, these are first world problems, right? Like, and we're not even in this tax bracket that we're trying, this fifth tier. We're not even there. And so when we're worried about those individuals who are, you know, gosh, we should be worried about them because they make taxable of $1 million. Like, I'm not worried about those individuals. The state of Minnesota invested in me. And when we're talking about, we need to have investments in people to be here. There was a comment about how we attract talent. This is it. Like, I was that talent you attracted. And I lived in many states afterwards. I came to Minnesota. I worked out in Washington, D.C. I lived in Chicago. And you know where I came back to? Minnesota. Because this is where I wanted to raise my family. This is because we have good education system here. Because we do have great public services here. I came back to Minnesota. I could have lived anywhere. I could have lived in any other state. And I chose to be back here in Minnesota. So the things that we are trying to warn people of, this is actually the place to be. And so, one, we are not a sinking ship. And I reject that notion at all in that comparison. Two, we are actually, this is the investment in the state that we need to bring in new talent, new ideas to fill that workforce. Are the people leaving? Not because our taxes are so high, because Arizona, Florida, when you're older, much better place to be than 30 below here in February. But you are getting new people who we are investing in so that they can pay the taxes I'm paying right now. And you all know what we make here. It's not because I'm making so much money. You know, it's like the investment made in our family is what is paying the taxes so that everyone else can have the services that they need. And so I just wanted to make sure that we really understand what we're doing here. And you're right. This is not a single bill. In totality, all of the things that we're trying to do makes Minnesota better. Because when I'm looking at my pension bill, I'm not just looking at pensions. I'm looking at, well, how else did we invest in people who have pensions with us? Are we investing in younger teachers who are getting the services they need in school so that their EL students have a fully funded education? And thank you, Chair Joachim, for putting that into the bill. Like, we're looking at all ways in which all we do intersect, because none of us work on our problems in a silo. When you have a problem in your life, you don't say, well, I can't work in the other 10 problems because I'm only focusing on one thing. We are complex people in Minnesota, and we can focus on many, many things, having family leave for people who need it, making sure that child care is funded, making sure that those who are at the top income level can pay more. And you know what? The truth is that the term fair share, there isn't good. I didn't use that term, and I don't actually like that term because it is really difficult. But we have to acknowledge that there is a segment of our population that says, I don't feel like the system is fair. They're not saying, let me give you a number to make it fair. They're saying, I am not feeling the justice in this system, in the money that I make. And so I want it to be fair. And that's all that they can say for us to punish them for using words that they know because they're not sitting in finances and taxes doing the numbers with us. It's really unfair for us to attack them in that way. And I will just say that you're right. I'm not necessarily for taxing tobacco, but you know what taxing tobacco did? We reduced the number of young people who smoke. We reduced lung cancer. We actually improve the health of individuals within our society. And I'm sorry, but that's a society I want to be a part of. So, you know what? Taxes may not be the best, but it actually has great benefits, too. And so we can look at the pros and cons of all. But let's just look at what is the society in which we want to build here in Minnesota. So with that, I do ask for all of your support in this bill. It is a great way for us to really look at those who can pay to be able to provide that additional income for us. So thank you, committee.
We have another bill.
Thank you, Representative Herr. All right. With that, I am going to renew my motion that House File 442, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. and 442 and House File 442 as amended is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you,
Madam
Representative
Chair,
David.
Point of personal privilege, Chair.
Yes, absolutely.
Representative Hur was talking about someone who asked a question about fair share was attacking someone and punishing someone. If we're that thin-skinned around here, that was not an attack. That was not punishment. That was an honest question. When a comment is brought up, I want to know what that means. That's all. I'm just a poor farm boy from Fillmore County trying to do good things for folks, and I need things explained to me sometimes. I was not attacking or punishing any. I can't believe anybody would say that. So that's very unfortunate.
All right. Next up on our agenda is House File 2883. And if anybody was worried about us being close to the end of our time, privilege of the Tax Committee, every other committee stopped meeting, so we have this room as long as we need. Except that we have to go to Ways and Means in 35 minutes. So very generous amount of time within 35 minutes. Okay, Representative Hornstein, I'm going to move that House File 2883 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. To your bill, Representative Hornstein.
Well, thanks so much, Madam Chair. Good to see everybody again.
We didn't get enough of Chair Hornstein last week, so we had to have him back.
So thank you again for hearing this bill, Madam Chair and members. House File 2883 requires corporations filing taxes here in Minnesota to declare their combined worldwide income for all of their subsidiaries. The bill creates a more fair and honest corporate tax code. It treats large and small businesses equally. In the long run, it will also point us in the direction that the world is going in terms of appropriately taxing corporate profits in a globalized economy. So the bill would raise revenue and ensure that there's proper reporting of corporate profits. It really gets at this idea of sheltering or avoiding tax liabilities by shifting profits abroad. I've done a version of this bill. I think veterans of the Tax Committee know I've done a version of this bill almost every session I've been here. This is a little bit different, but very similar. So. Currently, corporations filing taxes in Minnesota report only profits within the United States or the water's edge, as it's sometimes referred to. And Minnesota, like many states, determines the share of U.S. tax profits taxable within the state by dividing sales within the state by total sales within the United States and multiplying that fraction by total corporate profits. What we're doing here is addressing the way that these subsidiaries are handled in law, because they are, again, where I think some of this problem lies. You shelter, it's very famous, sheltering these assets in places like the Grand Cayman Islands, for example. So, it ends this practice of treating all foreign subsidiaries as one unitary entity and assessing Minnesota's tax liabilities based on the share of global sales and profits rather than on those just claimed in the United States. That is really the operative principle here. That's, if there's one thing to from this, it would be that. And then finally, members, I just came across very interesting. Back in 2016, I believe it was April 16, 2016, in Time Magazine, there was a report that showed that 50 of the biggest U.S. Companies have stashed more than $1 trillion offshore and used more than 1,600 subsidiaries in tax havens to avoid billions of dollars in tax each year. Such tax dodging, again, this is a total quote from Time, such tax dodging costs the U.S. an estimated $100 billion each year, a gap that the average American taxpayer would have to shell out $760 to cover. So that is, I think, in a nutshell, what we're the problem we're solving here. And I think there has been support for this, at least in Washington, in the past on both sides of the aisle. And I hope we can do that here That was called the deemed repatriation issue that surfaced a few years ago at the federal level, and I hope we can achieve that here as well. And so I have a number of testifiers, Chair Gomez.
Thank you very much, Chair Hornstein. First up is Eric Harris-Bernstein, and on deck is Beth Kadoon. Thank you very much. It's been so long since we've heard from you. Welcome to the committee.
I know. Chair Gomez and members of the committee, my name is still Eric Bernstein, and I'm still director of We Make Minnesota, which is still a coalition of laboring community groups united in support of a sufficient and equitable budget. Thank you for the opportunity to share our support for HF 2883, which would simplify opaque corporate tax structures and level the playing field between large multinational corporations and small, locally owned businesses here in Minnesota. Currently, multinational corporations are able to use foreign subsidiaries to locate profits in lower tax jurisdictions abroad. For example, a firm may transfer intellectual property to a subsidiary in a lower tax country and then pay that subsidiary to lease the IP back to their entity in the U.S. at a high profit margin. This inflates the profits of the foreign entity and lowers profits and thus tax liabilities for the U.S. partner. In this way, large multinational corporations can influence their effective U.S. tax rates in a way that small and local businesses cannot. HF 2883 would end this practice with regard to Minnesota's corporate income tax by requiring corporations filing in Minnesota to declare their complete income rather than just the portion that they have chosen to ascribe to the United States. This system of complete reporting would not only be more fair across various business structures, but it would ultimately create a simpler and more accurate corporate tax system. The DOR's current revenue analysis suggests that this policy would raise about $452 million over the 2024-25 biennium, but in some cases this policy would result in tax reductions if current profit margins are higher for U.S. subsidiaries than for those located abroad. And in some states there's a worldwide filing option, and corporations will select that based on how they've done in different subsidiaries in different jurisdictions. So it's not just a one-way street. In other words, HF 2883 would raise taxes only in proportion to the extent to which firms have shifted profits into lower tax jurisdictions. Importantly, because corporate tax liabilities would continue to be apportioned based on total sales, this system would guarantee that corporations still pay taxes only on the share of income earned within Minnesota. For this reason, there is also little justification for the idea that this policy would lead to a reduction in private sector activity in Minnesota. As with our current system, the only way to avoid Minnesota tax liabilities would be to reduce profitable sales within Minnesota, which large multinational firms would be unlikely to do. In closing, I would just add that in many cases, I am sympathetic to uncertainty about the meaning of phrases like corporations should pay their fair share. But HF 2883 is one example of a case where this phrase can have a clear, simple, and reasonable meaning. Corporations should pay Minnesota taxes on the share of their profits earned in Minnesota. That's what this bill does. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, Ms. Kadoon, welcome back. It's me welcoming everybody back, I think, on this list. So.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Beth Kadoon. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. We are here to oppose this corporate tax law change. This will make Minnesota an extreme tax outlier both nationally and internationally, greatly undermine our state's business climate and future economic growth. I would refer you to a letter that was submitted by the Council of State Taxation that should be in your packet in opposition to this corporate tax change. As stated in their letter, no other state in the United States or country in the world currently utilizes such mandatory worldwide combined reporting to calculate all corporate income taxes. Minnesota should reject this approach as well. Its adoption would place Minnesota at a huge competitive disadvantage among states and would send a warning flag to multinational businesses that the state is a hostile environment for business expansion and relocation. You can see their letter for additional concerns. Worldwide combined mandatory reporting has been rejected in other states and nations for a variety of reasons, including international trade issues, a long history of contentious litigation, and extreme complexities. Minnesota already imposes the second highest corporate rate in the nation. We will soon be number one in the nation as New Jersey's surcharge is set to blink off at the end of 2023.
Our high corporate tax rate already places Minnesota at a disadvantage, and adding this new corporate tax requirement on foreign income along with our already high corporate rate would be very detrimental to a Minnesota's business climate and I believe ultimately our state's economic success. We urge you to oppose this bill that would make Minnesota an extreme tax outlier. As I was mentioned, no other state or country has adopted this type of reporting. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cadoon. Yeah, there are a couple of letters in our packets. This is our first, congratulations, Chair Hornstein, our first letter from COST of the session. So, and then there's another one that I haven't heard of. I think that's like a think tank from Australia. So we're getting a lot of interest and impact.
Local.
Just locals. Just like, COST is just like, the largest corporations in the world, Amazon, Walmart, Capital One, they're all paying attention to Minnesota today. So we're happy to hear that. All right, next up is, I'm going to say your name right this time. Third time's a charm, Ben Balio. Welcome back.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Again, my name is Ben Balio. I'm testifying on behalf of the Minnesota Nurses Association, and I'd just like to express MNA's support for House File 2883, which we believe would ensure that the wealthiest corporations doing in business in Minnesota are paying more in taxes. Corporations should not be allowed to avoid paying state taxes simply because they've got the resources to stash their cash abroad. And we're grateful for this bill's attempt to address this issue. MNA generally supports efforts to ensure that entities making their millions off the backs of Minnesota's working families are paying our state back for the opportunities and successes that our state has provided them with. And without workers, without labor, there is no economic growth for Minnesota. Like the last bill, we believe that this gets us closer to more equitable taxation here in Minnesota. It'll help workers, and MNA is proud to support it. And with that, I'd just like to thank you again, Chair Gomez, members of the committee, for your time today.
Thank you very much. Gavin Hansen, welcome back.
Thank you, Chair and members. My name is Gavin Hansen. I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Business Partnership. Minnesota is home to a diverse economy with many Fortune 500 companies that compete globally. Our corporate community invests in the success of Minnesota, contributing over 50% of all philanthropic giving that occurs in the state. Minnesota's largest employers find success both nationally and internationally, despite the most unfriendly tax climate in the nation. Minnesota should be working to encourage exports and expansion into global markets, not penalizing that expansion. When Minnesota companies expand globally, it creates high-paying jobs here at home. The mandatory worldwide combined reporting has been tried in the past, in the 1980s in some states, and rejected due to large international political concerns. And more recently was reviewed, then rejected by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. More of that history you will find included in the letter from COST. Minnesota has a long history of primarily only taxing income earned within the United States, taking a water's edge approach. House File 2883 offers a significant departure from Minnesota's and other states' tax policies and would result in large tax increases on many Minnesota-based companies. Due to the complexity of mandatory worldwide reporting, it also risks double taxing a business. Taxing foreign income at the state level puts Minnesota business at a serious competitive disadvantage with non-U.S. companies. Requiring worldwide combined reporting would make Minnesota an extreme outlier. No other state has mandatory worldwide reporting. It is quite confusing and even more complex to try and implement. Minnesota Business Partnership asks that in a time of historic state surplus, you seek tax policy that will allow members to continue to be competitive globally, not make Minnesota an even more challenging place to do business. Drastic tax policy like House File 2883 that will have enormous impact on our local economy shouldn't be taken lightly. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Kelly Martinson, welcome back to the committee.
Hello again, Chair Gomez and members of the committee. My name is Kelly Martinson and I work with Kids Counting Us. We're a coalition of over 500 child care providers across Minnesota. I'm here today to support HF 2883 to require worldwide combined reporting for multinational corporations. This shift is estimated to raise just over $500 million in the 24-25 biennium, which is of course not earmarked directly for childcare or for nurses or for healthcare or for anything else, but as my expertise is in childcare, I will use childcare examples. $500 million is a drop in the bucket to these corporations, but to those working in childcare and early learning in Minnesota, and to Minnesota families trying to afford childcare, it is a windfall. It is the difference between staying open and closing their doors for so many child care providers. It's the difference between working and not working for too many parents. Hiring and retaining staff is one of the most pressing issues for providers. For $300 million, we can keep retention payments at the same level as the stabilization grants that have been keeping child care centers open the past 2 years. Child care providers use stabilization grants to raise wages for their staff. If the retention payments are less than the stabilization grants were, they have no choice but to raise rates for parents to continue to pay their staff the wages they deserve. For most child care centers, that means a rate hike of 7% for families. While child care and early learning is finally getting some love from the legislature this year, it is only about a third of what we need to fund child care to a level where no family pays more than 7% of their income for care. Affordability for families is unfortunately left behind this year. $500 million to make child care more affordable would allow Rama, a mother of a 2.5-year-old and a 1-year-old, who works from home full-time while also caring for her two children, while her husband is on the road for work, to send her children to child care so she can stop living in an endless pandemic state and finally breathe. It would allow parents to work one full-time job instead of two or three to make ends meet, provide for their families, and afford child care. And it would allow the parents who have simply left the workforce because they cannot afford childcare at all to decide if they want to go to school or pursue a career. In an early learning classroom, kids are soaking up and learning new things every single day. They learn how to be responsible for themselves and to each other. You will never find a childcare teacher or a parent, I hope, that would tell their child they have to clean up their toys, wash their hands, or be kind to others only when it suits them. So why are we telling corporations they only have to report their worldwide income when it suits them? Child care providers, teachers, parents, and kids would like them to report it all the time and play fair like the rest of us. I urge you to support HF 2883. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That concludes the folks I had signed up to testify. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on House File 2883? Not seeing any. We'll move to member discussion. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have many of the same concerns, Chair Hornstein, that I raised about the previous bill, just in terms of our competitiveness. But specifically with regard to this, I mean, I know you've brought this bill many years, and we've had this discussion before, but every other state and every other country has rejected this approach, and it just concerns me greatly that Minnesota would take this step, and it would be tremendously harmful to our competitiveness. But I did have a question. I know we have a revenue note, but not a fiscal note, and I wondered if the department was here and I could ask them a question.
There's a revenue estimate in our packet.
Right.
Well, Ms. Bears is here, and I know that If you have a question
so
about
maybe
the
her
or Ms. Templin, maybe ask the question and then we'll see if we can handle it. I know Mr. Clayman also knows a ton about this stuff, so maybe we'll just go ahead with your question and take
it
from there.
So my first question is, it seems to me that we talk about in the revenue note the revenue that this bill will raise, but there's no cost estimate of what it's going to cost the department and businesses to comply with this. I mean, it will be incredibly complex when you have to figure out all of the different entities that would come under this, all the different exchange rates in the countries where you're gathering it, and the accounts, according to the bill, have to be done in the home currency of where they're located. So I would just like to understand from the department, like, will this take a bunch of new FTEs? Will they have to create a new IT system? Like, this will be the only one in the entire world. So, like, how are we going to actually implement this?
So we'll move to Ms. Templin, but I do just want to mention that this, is related to, a piece of conformity in the base broadening that happened in the TCJA. A version of this bill has been around here for many years. There's been a lot of consultation that's been happening with the department. I don't know, Ms. Templin, if you have any comments on that. I also know there's like this thing that I don't exactly understand because I'm new here, but like the administration of, like, we don't kind of account for administration in the same way in the tax committee that we do in other committees, as I understand it. But I'll just go to Ms. Templin for any
Madam info. Chair and Representative Robbins, correct. There is no fiscal note for this proposal. Typically, the tax committee and prior years as well for tax proposals, the administrative impacts are often not reflected in the House tax proposal before it passes the House floor. So at this time, there is not a fiscal note. However, when proposals are debated in conference committee, the administrative costs are often reviewed at that time. So at this point in the session, there's not a fiscal note for this proposal.
Thank you, Ms. Templin. And maybe Representative Davids was going to provide us with a little context for how we calculate those things in tax committee. Representative
Davids. Well, thank you so much, Madam Chair. And I think Ms. Templin summarized it perfectly. We did what she said. It's basically discussed in much more depth in conference committee to get the correct numbers.
Madam Chair.
Yes, sorry. Representative Robbins.
Thank you. Well, assuming I will not be able to serve on a conference committee, I would still love the department or whoever does eventually get those numbers to make them available, because this is a huge lift, and I think we have to account for what that will mean for the department. And then secondly, again, perhaps for Ms. Templin, but I was interested to know in the revenue note, oh, and now I've lost it, but you relied on a group called the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy's 2019 report to create the estimate. And I just found that very unusual. So does the department not have its own modeling to do this? Why would you use a partisan think tank to create the model?
Ms. Templin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Robbins. Yes, that is correct. The Department of Revenue did rely on the ITEP report that was published, I believe, in 2018. And that report was also used for the estimates for this proposal in previous years. I can't speak to the report, you know, and if they're independent or not, but it does rely on the report does reference other analyses because there aren't any data sets available to the Department of Revenue. They have to rely on this report, or they have used this report as a reference for the revenue estimate. And the report does reference how it takes the midpoint of various analyses conducted by other organizations, and the midpoint being a TCJA analysis was done on worldwide combined reporting, and this report relies on that midpoint.
Representative Robbins.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. I'm not sure it clears it up for me, but I don't know where else to go with it. So, members, I just, I really encourage us to continue to think about our competitiveness. We already will soon be the highest corporate tax state in the country, and this would make us the only jurisdiction in the world to require taxation of combined reportings, and I just I can't imagine that would help our state, and I really urge members to think of other ways that we can encourage growth, not disincentivize it. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Howard.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. Thank you, Mr. Hornstein, for bringing this bill. Listening to the conversation on the last bill and this one, I'm kind of struck by we often seem to kind of have a binary conversation about taxes, whether they're good, whether they're bad, whether we should do them, whether we shouldn't, and not consider, you know, whether they're just or fair or both sides of the ledger. And I just think objectively to this bill, it's not fair that some of the, wealthiest multinational corporations in the world can use a tax avoidance strategy that regular Main Street businesses or the families that we represent don't take. And one study showed that Amazon, Facebook, Google, Netflix, Apple, and Microsoft together avoided paying $100 billion in taxes over the last 10 years. And Amazon alone avoided paying $5.1 billion just in 2021 alone. It was raised whether this will be too complicated for those companies to report those. I'm confident that the financial wizards at Amazon and others that have figured out a way to avoid paying $1 billion in taxes can figure out a way to comply with this bill. And so that's the fairness piece. I just think it's objectively unfair. But the other question is, do we need to? Do we need to pursue this? And the reality is we are spending less on the public good than we were decades ago, and it shows in our crumbling infrastructure and the fact that more people now, over 500,000 Minnesotans, can't afford their homes. I just talked to a teacher just outside. They were here for a day on the Hill, that their school can't hire a counselor, a mental health counselor, in their elementary school. And it's why, for the average worker over the past many years, their wages are staying relatively flat, all while costs of health care, of energy, of housing are going up, all while we're seeing corporations and the various wealthy Minnesotans get richer and richer. And so the last thing I'd say is to the issue of competitiveness. What I see as the greatest risk for our economic competitiveness is the rising income inequality in this state and in this country. No country, industrialized country, has a larger income inequality problem as we do, a problem that's grown. And when we have policies that create an unequal playing field like we currently have, that exacerbates that problem. That makes us less competitive. And so a bill like this that levels the playing field, that creates a fair, more just policy, I would argue makes us a stronger state, and I'm proud to support it.
You. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There is hope. There's a lot of hope here because our Chair Hornstein is reading Time Magazine. That's, there is hope. I guess I had a question, maybe just a head shake from the department. What we used to do back in the day, and it's not back in the day, and so I apologize for that, but I always wanted to know, does the department support something or do they have concerns? I'd never say they didn't like it. They had to have concerns. Does the department have a position? Okay, that's interesting. Okay, so this has been out there a lot of years, and I hope it has the same fate that it's had in a lot of years, because members, this is extremely regressive. We can go after those big, bad, evil corporations, and all they do is they pass it on to the poor folk. That's just the way it works. So if you want to raise taxes and cost to poor folk, support this bill. But my biggest question was to Chair Hornstein, where's your list of countries?
Yeah. Oh, here we go. All right. Take it back. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much. Madam Chair, Representative Davids, I took your concerns and criticisms in 2021 to heart, or 2019, whenever the last time we were in person. I remember you were sitting right over there, and you really raised some excellent points about that list. And you raised some excellent points about the OECD, which was the international organization we were basing that off of. So I took your advice. We don't have that anymore. I'm going to miss, in the past, Luxembourg has contacted me. They were very upset and concerned. The ambassador, members, Madam Chair, the ambassador to Latvia actually made a trip here, and I met with him. And
useful.
Then someone from the United Kingdom, from the consulate in Chicago, came up here. And we had a nice chat over crumpets and tea. So, I want to avoid that situation again. Representative Biskins back in the day gave me a hard time because Jordan was on the list, and of course he represents Jordan at the time. So, I took your advice, and we don't have that list now.
Well, Madam Chair, the reason I was asking was because I think the bonding committee tours all the places that they're working on. And so Turks and Caicos, I think Trinidad and Tobago, they were on the list. So I was looking forward to a little legislative travel here in the Taxes and Foreign Relations Committee.
All right. Grand Cayman junket, TVD. All right. With that, I'll go back to Chair Hornstein for any closing comments.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Madam Chair and members. I thought that Representative Howard put it very well. We want to avoid what's really become a legal tax avoidance strategy for a lot of corporations. And I did want to just correct this narrative that this doesn't exist anywhere. This is a concept that no other state is involved with. We have a version of this in 7 different states, I think, including Montana and Alaska. We did have, again, a version of this. There were lots of other problems with the tax policies, under the previous governance in Congress and in the executive branch. So I'm not supporting those, but there was a version of deemed repatriation then. And so, again, this is not, this is a concept that is that has precedent, and other states and the federal government have adopted in recent years. And so I think it would be very healthy from a equity standpoint, making sure that we have our small businesses are being treated the same way as our big businesses. And someone has to pay for these tax avoidance schemes. And so I think it is a good policy, and I hope this is the year that it is finally adopted, so I don't have to keep coming back year after year. So thank you so much, Chair Gomez, for hearing the bill, and I hope we'll have support from the committee later in the process. Thank you, members.
Thank you very much. With that, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 2883 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill, and it is laid over. All right, that brings us to the end of our agenda. Next meeting, TBD, please watch your email inboxes, and we'll see everybody soon. Thank you. We're adjourned. Sorry.